Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for the Economics Report and American Mosaic, coming up after As It Is.
Hello again. I'm Jim Tedder in Washington with the program that helps you learn and improve your American English. Today we talk about music and the human brain. Then we will go to the movies. A new film uses some people from Somalia to tell the story, but they are not professional actors. Listen carefully and enjoy today's lesson on As It Is. Researchers have found that the brains of children who grow up in poverty interpret sounds differently from other children. But an American study shows how musical training can affect the brain so that poor children might be able to better process what they hear. It finds such training could help them improve language and other skills. Christopher Cruz has more about the study and a music program called Harmony Project.
16-year-old Katrina Reyes fell in love when she saw the trombone. She liked the instrument.
I guess it was the sound and the feel and like how it looked. And it was not ordinary for a girl to play trombone.
Katrina has been attending a free music program in California for the past 5 years. It is called Harmony Project. Margaret Martin launched the program more than 10 years ago. Ms. Martin holds a doctoral degree in public health. But she speaks of difficult experiences while growing up. She was pregnant during her teenage years. And at one time in her life, she was homeless, having no permanent place to live. Ms. Martin says that, at first, the goal of Harmony Project was to help children in poor, often violent neighborhoods stay in school and finish high school. But she was surprised to find many of the music students deciding to continue their education.
Since 2008, 93% of our high school seniors have graduated in 4 years and have gone to colleges like Dartmouth, Tulane, NYU.
Margaret Martin noted that some of the students sought college degrees in highly technical subjects. She began to wonder if music had had some effect on the students. It did not make sense until researchers put sensors on the children's heads. The researchers measured how the children reacted to sounds before and after they studied music at Harmony Project. Nina Kraus is a neuroscientist at Northwestern University in Illinois. She is an expert on the brain and nervous system. She led a study of the effects of music. Her findings were published in the Journal of Neuroscience. The research involved boys and girls between the ages of 6 to 9 years. All of the children were taking music lessons. They were studied over a 2-year period. Then they were restudied at intervals for another 2 years. Professor Kraus says she found that poor children process sound differently from other children.
We found that the neural signature for poverty was that children were processing the details of sounds less precisely.
But when a child started music training, something changed after 2 years.
So we were able to determine that the children who took part in the music lessons had nervous systems that responded to speech sounds in a more precise manner.
She adds that the children who spent most time in music lessons were the children who showed the largest gains. Those who studied music for 1 year showed no changes in their nervous systems. She says she would like other researchers to extend the study to thousands of students in many areas. Some of the young musicians at Harmony Project are like Ivan Ignacio Arce. He says they are living proof that music helps children improve in school.
After like Harmony Project, I get like a new understanding, like going to class, participating, having an open mind, discussions, talking with my teacher.
Katrina Reyes says she also sees a connection between music and schoolwork.
Math is like kind of easier because of rhythms and all that. It's easier to count, it's easier to calculate. And yeah, I have seen some improvements.
But for Katrina Reyes and other students, they are not playing only to do better in school. They play music because of the love of their instruments and the friendships formed through music. I'm Christopher Cruz.
You are listening to The Voice of America, and we are coming to you from Washington. Hollywood directors often make films about people who get persuaded to take part in a crime because they need money. There is a new look to this old story in a film called Fishing Without Nets. This time, the central character is a Somali fisherman who cannot support his family. And the crime is piracy, attacking ships on the high seas. Jerry Watson has more on the movie.
In Fishing Without Nets, a fisherman named Abdi cannot earn enough because pollution has killed off much of the catch he needs to feed his family. Then, a friend talks to him about helping a group of pirates, and he joins. The pirates capture a French oil ship and take the international crew hostage. They hope to get a huge payment when they free the crew. Cutter Hodierne directed the film. It is his first full-length movie. News about Somali piracy in the Indian Ocean had caught his interest. He was especially fascinated by the subject from the viewpoint of the gunman.
And I just was so intrigued by what would lead somebody to get to that point of doing something so desperate and also so kind of audacious.
In 2010, at age 24, Cutter Hodierne went to Kenya and made a shorter version of Fishing Without Nets. He used Somali refugees to play the parts. These untrained actors included day laborers, fishermen, and truck drivers. They were all living in Mombasa, Kenya, at the time. The short film won a Sundance Festival Grand Jury Prize. At that point, Vice Media provided $2 million to finance a feature-length version of the film. It was filmed again in Mombasa with many of the same Somali non-actors. Again, they invented their own speeches. Mr. Hodierne used a translator, a language expert, to tell them only basic facts about what should happen in each scene.
So they knew what was going to happen within a scene, and then they would improvise all of the dialogue within that scene so that it was in their voice. And they are amazing at that. They add so much to it that I couldn't have written on a page. And so I considered them sort of co-writers of the movie.
One critic described the movie with words like powerful, deliberate, and absolutely beautiful. The full-length film won a grand jury directing award at the Sundance Festival earlier this year. I'm Jerry Watson.
And I'm Jim Tedder in Washington. This is The Voice of America.
The Economics Report is next, followed by American Mosaic. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Economics Report. World oil prices have dropped by about 30% since June. That has helped many economies around the world. When people spend less on fuel, they can spend more on other goods. But lower oil prices also mean reduced profits for national oil companies. Privately owned oil producers and companies that provide services to the oil industry are also affected. Increased American oil production is one reason for the drop in world oil prices. Hydraulic fracturing technology developed in the U.S. has made the increase possible. Hydraulic fracturing, or fracking, is a process of pumping water and chemicals into the ground to force out natural gas and oil. It is often used to recover these fossil fuels from rock called shale. Jim Crane is an energy expert at the James Baker Institute for Public Policy at Rice University. He says oil produced from shale has changed the market.
So the shale production, that's entering the market and, pushing other sources of supply, that used to come to the U.S. Away from the U.S., and they're trying to find markets for that.
Mr. Crane says slowing economies in China and Europe have also reduced the demand for oil. In the past, the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries would react to decreasing demand by cutting production. The 12 member states often cooperate to influence oil prices around the world. However, Jim Crane says members want to defend their share of the market and are unwilling to make production cuts.
They're willing to see prices drop for a little while to see if they can sweat some of these higher cost producers out of the market.
However, this could affect small oil producing companies in the U.S. These companies feel the effects of falling prices more sharply on their profit margin.
If you're a small company that's thinking about investing in, putting in some new oil production, you might think twice if prices are down to $75.
In places like Houston, Texas, the oil industry is a major employer and economic driver. Economist Patrick Jankowski says lower oil prices have a clear dollar cost.
If you look at the production that we get in the state of Texas, we are producing 4.5 million more barrels a month than we were doing this time last year, yet the value of our production in Texas has dropped by over $1 billion a month.
However, Mr. Jankowski believes the oversupply will slowly disappear.
But by 2016, we'll probably start to see production drop again, definitely by 2017, but then we'll see prices go back up again.
He says decreasing prices may make energy company leaders nervous, but most are prepared for it. And that's the Economics Report from VOA Learning English. For more of our English learning programs, go to our website, learningenglish.voanews.com.
Welcome to American Mosaic from VOA Learning English. I'm Katie Weaver. Today on the program, Marcia James tells us about the growing number of international students in the United States. Also, Jonathan Evans reports with a personal touch about a recent musical performance in Washington, D.C. But first, we hear from Jerry Watson about an independent movie that tells the story of a Somali pirate.
Hollywood directors often make films about people who get persuaded to take part in a crime because they need money. There is a new look to this old story in a film called Fishing Without Nets. This time, the central character is a Somali fisherman who cannot support his family. And the crime is piracy, attacking ships on the high seas. In Fishing Without Nets, a fisherman named Abdi cannot earn enough because pollution has killed off much of the catch he needs to feed his family. Then, a friend talks to him about helping a group of pirates. The pirates capture a French oil ship and take the international crew hostage. They hope to get a huge payment when they free the crew.
I'm a fisherman.
No, you're not a fisherman. You're a pirate.
Cutter Hodierne directed the film. It is his first full-length movie. News about Somali piracy in the Indian Ocean had caught his interest. He was especially fascinated by the subject from the viewpoint of the gunman.
And I just was so intrigued by what would lead somebody to get to that point of doing something so desperate and also so kind of audacious.
In 2010, at age 24, Cutter Hodierne went to Kenya and made a shorter version of Fishing Without Nets. He used Somali refugees to play the parts. These untrained actors included day laborers, fishermen, and truck drivers. They were all living in Mombasa, Kenya, at the time.
So we would set up these informal auditions in restaurants and just like hangouts where Somalis would sit around and chew cot and drink tea, and we would audition people there.
The short film won a Sundance Festival Grand Jury Prize. At that point, Vice Media provided $2 million to finance a feature-length version of the film. It was filmed again in Mombasa, with many of the same Somali non-actors. Again, they invented their own speeches. Mr. Hodierne used a translator, a language expert, to tell them only basic facts about what should happen in each scene.
So they knew what was going to happen within a scene, and then they would improvise all of the dialogue within that scene so that it was in their voice. And they are amazing at that. They add so much to it that I couldn't have written on a page. And I considered them sort of co-writers of the movie.
Mr. Hodierne likes to describe Fishing Without Nets as an action film for theaters that show artistic films. He says the unlikely combination of suspense and reflectiveness works well. I'm Jerry Watson.
Almost 900,000 international students are studying in American colleges and universities today. Nearly half of this record number of foreign students are from Asia, mainly China. They are among people from other countries who now make up about 4% of all university students in the U.S. America has more of the world's 4.5 million international students than any other country. A new report says more than 886,000 foreign students registered at U.S. universities during the school year 2013-2014. That is an increase of 8% over the year before. The Institute of International Education and the State Department made the report. The study also demonstrates trends over the past 15 years. It shows that since 2000, the number of international students in the U.S. has grown by 72%. Students from China in undergraduate programs are mainly responsible for this trend. Eric Xu, a Chinese student at Columbia University, says studying in the U.S. is a valuable experience.
In the U.S., they emphasize on class discussion and emphasize on your opinion. You can actually debate with others and with your professor or teacher. And it's another atmosphere I want to experience.
While attendance by Chinese students rose by almost 17% over the past year, other countries also saw a major increase. Kuwait's college student population rose by 42%, and that of Brazil by 22%. Other countries with more international students than earlier are Saudi Arabia, Iran, and Venezuela. The report says the Middle East and North African area was the fastest growing in international student population. It showed an increase of 20% in students registered at colleges and universities. In Latin America and the Caribbean, there was an 8% increase. Rajika Bhandari is a writer of the report and Deputy Vice President of Research and Evaluation at the Institute of International Education. She says the presence of foreign students in American schools helps the U.S. She also says about 4,000 American colleges and universities can serve more overseas students.
We know that international students contribute significantly to U.S. classrooms and campuses through their global perspectives and by providing international exposure to those American students who may never have the opportunity to study overseas.
Evan Ryan, Assistant Secretary of State for Education, says enrollment of students from abroad also adds to the U.S. economy.
This year, $27 billion was contributed to our economy at the local, state, and national levels through payments for tuition, housing, and other costs.
The U.S. State Department and the Department of Education also encourage study in other countries by American students.
We believe that study abroad can increase American competitiveness by enabling U.S. students to acquire language skills as well as the regional and global perspectives necessary to succeed in the 21st century.
About 290,000 U.S. students went to study abroad in 2012-2013 for educational credit. Europe, especially Britain, remains the number one nation for study by Americans. But the latest report shows an increase in the number of students who now choose to go to China and other nations. While American schools continue to welcome young people from all over the world, student exchanges among other countries also are on the rise. I'm Marcia James.
New Orleans is a city famous for its food, mix of cultural influences, and of course, its music. The city known as the Big Easy is the birthplace of several styles of popular American music, including jazz and ragtime. New Orleans has a long history of combining musical art forms to create something different and fun. The band Bonorama is both. The New Orleans-based group brings together funk, rock, blues, and jazz, creating a gumbo for the ears. Bonorama has horns like many local bands, but unlike most groups, the trombone players lead this band. Craig Klein and Mark Mullins are the founders of Bonorama and two of its three trombone players. Both Mr. Klein and Mr. Mullins performed as part of the brass section for another New Orleans musician, Harry Connick Jr.
I don't much care if I am the last in line.
Craig Klein says he was inspired to start the band that would become Bonorama while traveling and playing music for Harry Connick Jr.
Mark and I were on tour with Harry Connick Jr. We started playing with him in 1990. And we were in New York, and I went and saw this Cuban band had five trombones, and I just had an idea. Let's make a New Orleans band that features the trombone.
The group formed in 1998. Mark Mullins says he knew from the start that the sound of Bonorama was different.
The sound of the unit from the very beginning was obvious that it connected with people for some reason. And I think people heard a sound when bringing these instruments together that they hadn't really heard before. In New Orleans, you hear a lot of different things. I mean, you'll hear funk bands and rock bands and, of course, brass bands. But a band of all trombones with the sousaphone and the conventional, like, funk band rhythm section was kind of different.
One special quality is that Mark Mullins sometimes makes his trombone sound like an electric guitar. He creates this effect using a guitar pedal that he connects to a microphone on his trombone. He can lift the pedal up and down to make different kinds of sounds, just like a guitar player. He says audiences enjoy hearing guitar sounds coming from a trombone. He adds that he is able to express musical ideas with the guitar pedal that may not be possible with trombone alone.
It's definitely fun to, it's like driving a different car, you know, speaking a little different language for a second there, because you can say things that you might not get away with saying quite as well without it. It gives you a different vocabulary for a minute. It's neat. But the rock stuff is fun. Transfers real well, and I think if you pick the right songs and just have fun with it, be honest with it, I think people kind of connect with that. They know if you're having fun. They know if it's kind of honest. And the sound of here, for the audience perspective, apparently it seems like they get a kick out of hearing Hendrix or Led Zeppelin through the voice of sousaphone and trombones. And it's fun for everybody.
Bonorama's latest album is called Shake It, Baby. It is the band's sixth album. But Craig Klein says the horn section has recorded music for at least 10 other musicians or groups, including R.E.M. and OK Go.
We were on R.E.M.'s record. We were on the Sierra Leone record. We did a record with some of the OK Go guys. Cowboy Mouth. Radiators. Wunderlich. Mark Stone. I guess we've probably been, as a horn section, probably about 10 different records or more.
Bonorama recently performed at the Hamilton in Washington, D.C. This reporter got to not only attend the performance, but to take the stage and play trombone with the band.